Accomplishment Coaching is proud to present the following fine programming. Accomplishment Coaching, where coaches lead and leaders coach. AccomplishmentCoaching.com.
Welcome to The Coaching Show with your host, Master Certified Coach Christopher McAuliffe.
Welcome to another edition of The Coaching Show. I'm your host, Christopher McAuliffe, getting used to the idea of not having the intro music in my ear. So I'm going to assume that you heard the intro, and I want to thank Dick Warren for that. In our show today, I almost said in the studio, but in our homes where we are safe and reluctantly and firmly ensconced, I've got a guest co-host, Alex Terranova, is The Dream Mason. You can find him on thedreammason.com. Alex, where are you today? What are you doing? How are you?
I'm good. I'm in Thousand Oaks, California. Training I don't know why you're laughing at me, but I'm good.
Alexa just I asked you a question and Alexa answered in my home office here. Sorry.
She probably has a nicer voice than me though. She's still going. Are you one of those people, can you change her accent? Is there like a way that you ever talk? Is
it
like
I did it in my car. My GPS has a nice Irish lady that talks to me because I've only been to Ireland once, but I'm pretty sure if I ever go back, I'm marrying two or three people.
I was wondering if your wife has an issue with the fact that you picked a specific accent.
I'm not going to tell my wife. Hey, let's talk about, there are more important things we should be talking about. First of all, how are you? Are you well, family? How's everybody?
Yeah, I'm really good. I'm feeling, I'm great actually. And I noticed last week I felt bad saying that. Like I should feel bad that I'm doing well, even though, you know, I could be heartbroken for the world and sad and also be doing well, but I'm doing really well and my family's doing well. So I feel very blessed and fortunate right now.
I'm glad to hear it. I think that one of the greatest things we've ever done is create a job for ourselves where we can do it remotely like this, right? Coaching so important for the world, but thankfully not stopped now. I wanted to know how you're doing with the whole coronavirus. I mean, are you noticing mood swings? Are you noticing fits of rage or, you know, intolerance with other people? Or are you just like chill and delightful as ever?
You know, at first I just felt like I was like laughing it off because it was so insulated. And then as I started to see it impact closer and closer to the world around me, I started to really be like, oh my God, this is very serious. This is a real thing. Whether it impacts me directly or not, it actually does impact me directly as like a citizen of the world. I think the thing I've noticed, and I shared this on another episode, was just the idea that it's a magnifying glass. So the things that I've been challenged by drama and relationships are just the things that are magnified more right now. So I noticed I had a client last week who got skittish about money and a little afraid. And the first thing I had to remind myself is this happens with or without the coronavirus. People have money issues every day of their life, 366 days a year, since the beginning of money. And that we can blame things on the coronavirus. We can look and say, hey, does this stuff normally happen? And now it's just happening during this time and we're actually getting more dramatic or more freaked out about it because there's something that seems a lot more scary in front of us.
So I hear about other people, but I didn't hear so much about you.
I think that's how it's impacting me, is through other people. I'm not going to lie. Like I kind of dig the staying at home, not having to go out. Like I'm not cabin fever. I'm like, this is great. Everyone's keeping their crazy in their own little homes. I don't have to run into it. There's no traffic. When I go to the grocery store, it's like kind of empty.
There we go. Now I know how it is for you.
So it's actually not, but I think the way it impacts me is really through people. When I talk to clients and they're hurting, they're sad. When I talked to a client last week and they're in New York and they're like, this is worse than 9/11. You know, it's 9/11 every single day. Then that's when I really like, I really feel their pain. I feel their hurt. I'm honestly like, I'm doing great. I just feel like I'm getting, I don't know if it's empathy, sympathy, but like really feeling other people's pain.
Yeah, thanks for saying so. You know, I've got like a statement that I've been making because as a coach for 27 years, you know, there's some perspective, right? I became a coach in the 1990s when you were probably in T-ball, and I've coached consistently since then. So there have been, you know, boom times and bust times and outbreaks and wars and global terrors and things. When Y2K was a thing, you know, when we were all scared, I was a coach. When 9/11 happened, I was a coach. When we invaded Iraq, I was a coach. When the Challenger disaster happened, when the national and global economy tanked in 2008, through it all, I was a coach. And what I can provide from that experience is that coaching has been a good business. And by good, I mean useful, powerful, needed in good times. And coaching has been a good business, useful, powerful, and needed in bad times, no matter the circumstances, right? People in organizations need grounded, clear-eyed support. And arguably, we're most effective, where powerful questions are most useful when the vision around us is clouded, you know, by fear, circumstances that seem insurmountable or uncertainty. So I've been spending a lot of time and effort lately reminding coaches that the world needs you and clients need you. You have been specially trained and prepared for a moment in the world such as this, and asking coaches to provide the leadership that is so desperately needed in our time. And then there's the personal side, right? I gave, a couple of years ago, my holiday gift to everybody was this sort of framed picture that said, you know, take a deep breath and trigger alert, there's profanity coming. It said, take a deep breath and remember who the fuck you are, right? And I think that's important for coaches right now. But I'm also noticing my own complete insanity in certain moments and of time or certain circumstances. You know, last weekend I was a total jerk to my family, just a complete jerk. And I could see it going. And I know all the tools to avoid it and not do that and to clear myself and everything, but I wasn't going to. I was just like, I'm going to be mean and mad. And I'm mad. And wouldn't give it up. And I finally put myself in a timeout. Daddy's going to the to his office. And I'm hearing other coaches talk about that. Like I know a coach who lives alone, right? And he was just, I was just mad. And there's nobody here to be mad at. So I went in the garage and screamed and yelled and stomped my feet. But you haven't had any of that, huh? You're just chilling like.
It's funny, that coach told me that story yesterday, and I said, why'd you go in the garage? You don't live with anyone. I haven't had that. Like, I mean, the biggest area that I have had breakdowns is relationship. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think, like, I have those breakdowns anyway. Like, I have those breakdowns whether there's a coronavirus or not. So I think that's been the thing is, I don't know, maybe I also think, and you've known me for what, almost 6 years now, I thrive in chaos.
Yeah, those are the people, right? The people that are calm, that can like manage their mm-hmm. feelings, emotions, and reactions.
And I don't want to say—
You're going to blow is what I'm saying. One of these days.
February, I was reading that book that I don't remember who recommended, but The Wild.
Oh yeah, yeah. You love that book.
Yeah, and February was a month of like tears and anger and dealing with sorrow and grief and sadness like I'd never experienced in my life. So maybe there was I got a lot of that out before this really hit. Mm-hmm. Because I really don't feel like that. And I am aware that like I thrive in chaos. My life is usually, when things are calm, I'm like, my ego is trying to mess it all up to get back to chaos. And when things are just naturally chaotic, I don't have to do anything. I just have to look around and go, oh, just walk through the madness. I used to always say that like, if the world ended, I would probably be a really good person to be like in your little clique, to like in your little tribe of people.
Don't even pretend that you're not a survivalist and you don't have a bunch of cans, canned goods and weaponry at your house. I know you do.
A little bit. But I always thought like, hey, I seem like I'm more calm, more focused, more grounded when things are wacky. And when things are good, I'm trying to make them wacky.
Yes. So, I have seen that. I believe you.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think that's I think there's a lot of people like me. I don't think I'm unique in that, but I think that a lot of other people are trying to avoid chaos most of their life.
Well, we're
I just seem to operate better inside of it.
I I think that we've got the perfect guest to talk about the additional stresses that the pandemic, the global pandemic that we never thought we'd see in our time, has brought to us. Our guest today is Dr. Debbie Silber. She's founder of the Post-Betrayal Transformation Institute. We'll talk more about that. But she's also author of a number one best-selling book, The Unshakable Woman, Four Steps to Rebuilding Your Body, Mind, and Life After a Life Crisis. And if somebody knows about stress and how to manage stress, especially overwhelming stress, it's Debbie Silber. We are delighted to welcome you to our microphones. Hello. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much. Looking forward to our conversation.
Look around outside. Where are you? You got a beautiful backdrop. It looks like you're in Japan somewhere.
It looks like I'm amongst the cherry blossoms. I wish it's just a beautiful background. I'm in New York, not in the city, but it is crazy here for sure.
Speaking of stress and overwhelm, New York City, right? Let's talk about stress, because I think that what Alex and I have, I know you've been listening, have been talking about is a couple of different reactions, right? There's the everything's fine until it's not. And then there's the sort of like, no, everything's fine. I had my reaction in February. I'm fine. Is that a predominantly male response? Are other people, are women having different experiences? Are people having different experiences?
I think everyone's having their own experience, and it's just completely unpredictable, because this is bringing out, I'm seeing the best, I'm also seeing the worst in everyone. You know, we're being called to think, act, behave, react so differently than anything we're used to. And it's interesting watching how people show up. I mean, some people are looking at it like, this is the best opportunity to do all the things I didn't have a chance to do, to be with family, to just spend time, to just become, to create. And other people are freaking out. You know, it's what the heck do I do? I can't go here. I can't go there. And they're looking at it from a place of what's been taken away. And it's just, it's so interesting, because I'm really seeing so many different types of responses.
I'm curious, because we just talked about ours. What is it like for you? What's your response? Which side of that do you fall on?
You know, I have to say, you know, I've four kids and, well, six dogs and a business. Wow. And all that. So there's a lot going on, but there's something kind of nice about having everybody around, and we're spending time. I mean, I've had an online business forever, so not much of that's been changed, except I've changed in a lot of the programs and things that I've been offering, and just creating things just to give, just to serve during these times. But I'm really looking at it. I created something called the Daily 10, which is just, I get rid of 10 things a day. Just feels good. Cleaned out my garage, you know, just and creating new things, and so using it really to my advantage. And sure, I mean, things aren't open, and I'd love to see friends, but you know, Zoom is a wonderful alternative. And it's when we use our phones and computers for good, you know, a lot of us are connecting more than we ever have. So it hasn't really been a struggle. I mean, I have to be honest. It hasn't been terrible at all. I mean, what's terrible is all the people in New York I'm hearing about, and you know, people I know who struggled. But then again, most of them, they're surviving this, and they're coming out of the hospital. They're you know, they're okay.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate like you sharing yours too. How are people showing up in your business in a different way than they showed up before? Because you were dealing with betrayal, you know, you were dealing with people that are hurt, you were dealing with traumas in a different sort of way. Mm-hmm. Has anything shifted from the kinds of people that are reaching out to you now versus before? Is it all the same?
You know, I don't know if they're reaching out differently. I'm reaching out differently. Like I just sent out an email to everyone on my list, and you know, I have a program, it's typical price. And I thought, you know what, now is the time. And on Sunday, I gave a link to the program just so they could see what it's about, with a blank link saying, pay what you can, you know, as long as you feel ethically and as long as you can comfortably afford it, go ahead. And I'm getting such a nice response. So, and especially with the betrayal community, there's such trust issues. So, you know, I know from my side, if my perspective, if someone even does, like, let's say they can only afford $20 for the program or whatever, if they don't get access to that program soon, then they lump me in with, oh, I can't trust you either. So, you know, I know how I have to respond, but no, it's the same, you know, same response from them. Although I am seeing a lot of people struggling that much more because some are quarantined with their betrayer. You know, some are struggling and it's like as if it weren't hard enough. Now they're, you know, homeschooling their kids too. Now they're laid off from work. So it's all of these additional stressors that they didn't have to worry about on top of, you know, the betrayal alone.
I want to go in both directions. Sorry, am I cutting you off, Alex?
Let me follow this up really quick because I'm curious if she's seen this. I've seen this interesting pattern too within like the networking groups I'm in and other coaches that I support and support me, that a lot of us are saying, hey, we're going to offer this program for free or a very low price, or we're creating things that are free. I know I have about three things right now that are completely free that I should be charging, you know, in a normal environment, I'd be charging money for. And the thing that I noticed is a lot of people who are saying they're struggling, challenged, or, you know, in trouble, whether it be business or personal, are still not saying yes to the support and the help. And I'm curious on your thoughts, like if you're seeing that also and your thoughts on that.
I am, because then they'd be forced to give up their story. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the, with so many people, I mean, that's their identity. If they move forward, you know, I have one of the, and I'm happy to talk about it, my study and what it led to. But one of the discoveries was, you know, because I studied betrayal, what holds us back, what helps us heal, and what happens to us physically, mentally, and emotionally when the people closest to us lie, cheat, and deceive. One of the discoveries was that there are, in fact, these five stages that we move through if we're going to heal. I mean, we could stay stuck for years, decades, a lifetime. Many of us do. But if we're going to heal, we'll move through these five stages. And what I see in particular, and this is the stage that most people get stuck in for years, if not a lifetime, is they have to be willing to give up their story and all the benefits that come with it and all the small self gains in order to heal. And a lot of them don't want to. So they stay stuck. And I see it all the time. You know, it's, I remember a woman came into my office and, you know, arms folded and she sits down and she's like, I want to heal. I'm like, no, you don't. No, you don't, because you have to give that up. You have to give up what's become your identity. You've worn that like an old sweater for so long, you don't even know what's on. And you have to see that clearly in order to say, okay, you know what? It served me. I, you know, think about it, even when it comes to something like betrayal, whether it's betrayal of a family member, partner, friend, coworker, self, you know, you get to be right. You get someone to blame. You get a target for your anger. You get, you know, you don't have to do the hard work of learning to trust again. Do I trust you? Do I trust you? Do I trust you? Ah, forget it. I won't trust anybody. You get to justify in action. I can't do that. Look what I've been through. You know, so you get all those benefits that you actually have to give up if you want to heal. So a lot of people aren't willing to. So even though something could be the most incredible deal of a lifetime that could get them healthy, well, free, they don't want to give up that story.
It's such a good and clear example and message. And I'm thinking about all the people who are not me that it applies to, right? I want to, as I said a moment ago, I kind of want to go in both directions. I've got this experience that I think might translate to other people, and I'd love for you to work with me on it. Because what I notice is that this sort of betrayal mistrust can beget betrayal mistrust. So I've got a program, as Alex has been kind enough to say on this program before, we provide a year-long ICF-accredited coach training program through Accomplishment Coaching. And in that program, you sign on for the whole year, you know, and we're very clear up front, like surgery or an airplane flight, this is not something you get out in the middle, right? You go all the way to the end. And now recently, a couple of people in our program felt very strongly that we should somehow give them something like we made clear, hey, we're going to donate some money to some worthy causes related to the whole coronavirus pandemic. But these people said, no, you need to give me a refund or a discount or something for this pandemic. It feels like very much like a setup that you're talking about, right? Like on the one hand, you know, when I go to get coffee now, it's a completely different experience, but I recognize that we're all in that boat. And I don't say, hey, this coffee should be less because, you know, I can't have my full experience of your cafe. So for me, it didn't make any sense. But what I can hear in what you're sharing is that, oh, this is like somebody who's saying, I feel like I need to trust you. And for me to trust you, you need to give me something. And what it does for me is it makes me not trust them. Like, what are you, crazy? I'm not giving you a discount. What, you know, I got, and I imagine you have an opinion too, because we're not giving discounts right now. Although a lot of you are, and maybe I should be, maybe I'm stingy or, you know, wrong thinking, but I'm kind of like, this is the agreement. We're going to continue with the agreement and do our very best. What do you hear?
You know, I what I know for sure is if they pay nothing, they don't value it at all. So I would rather not have them as a client if they're not going to value it, because then they won't do the work and they won't get the benefit. So, and then it only, then they look at you. Well, your program didn't work. So no skin in the game means no benefit at all. So I am taking a chance by reducing, you know, the price, but like I said, I'm doing it saying, okay, what can you afford? And what's so interesting is some people are paying the full price. And to me, it's showing what they value as well. And I think so many people they're just coming from that place of lack. There's so much mistrust. My book that's coming out in September is called Trust Again. I have a 4-step trust rebuilding process. And I know in the betrayal community, trust is one of the biggest issues, because, you know, they're looking at it like the person they trusted the most proved untrustworthy. How can I trust you?
Right. And then I can't trust me because I trusted them and I was wrong. So now who do I trust? Yeah,
absolutely. And it's this complete and total shattering of everything they know to be real and true. And I get that, but I can't feed into that as well, because then I can't help them. I have to let them know I've been there. I mean, anybody who does this for a living, who's dedicated their entire practice, written books on it, created a post-betrayal transformation institute. I mean, obviously my heart's in it, but I, for me, just to feed into it, I'm not serving. I'm not helping.
And so this has to come up though. I'm imagining, like I gave you my example, but I assume it's come up in your practice too, where people with trust or betrayal issues come in and then want to recreate that dynamic with you. And how do you avoid that? I mean, in psychology, we'd be talking about transference, and in my case, countertransference, because now I don't trust them, right? Mm-hmm. But how do you manage to keep yourself out of that target?
I hit it straight on, and I tell them, I get that trust is the biggest issue for you, and for exactly that reason. You trusted this person with your heart, your, you know, I explain it where it's almost like if you imagine, let's say a nest, right? Now here's this bird who's taking carefully twigs and sticks and creating this safe, comfortable home for its inhabitants. Now imagine that very bird who created this safe home is the one who shatters it completely. Now the bird, whoever's living in that nest has one of two, you know, options. They survive or they perish. So I get it. I get where they are. It's that very person who gave them that sense of safety and security. So when they know I'm coming from a place of, I get it. I did a PhD in it. I understand it. And I've lived through it. I had two major betrayals. You don't study something like betrayal unless you have to, you know? So I understand. But I also tell them that if you do not learn how to trust again, it's a life half lived. It's like swearing off the stove because you got burnt. I mean, I get it. I get it hurts. But it's not fair to you to not learn to trust again. Yes, you have to be safe. Yes, you have to be careful. Yes, you have to. There's a very strategic way to go about it to rebuild it. But just to lump everyone into that same picture keeps you stuck, keeps you in a specific stage out of the 5 stages. It keeps them in what we know is a stage 3. And yes, they have every right to stay there. But it's to their detriment. You know, I use this analogy all the time. And I did this in my last TEDx, Do You Have Post-Betrayal Syndrome? And it's this. Here's the difference between resilience and transformation. Let's say with a house, let's say your house needs a new boiler. You get a boiler. That's resilience. Or let's say it needs a new roof. You get a roof. That's resilience. Here's transformation. A tornado comes by and levels your house, right? New boiler's not going to fix it. New roof's not going to fix it. Both aren't going to fix it. And you have every right to stand there at the lot where your house once stood and say, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. It's awful. It's horrible. And you'd be right. And you can call all your friends over and say, isn't this the most tragic thing you've ever seen? They'd all agree. And you have every right to stand there and mourn the loss of your house for the remainder of your days. However, should you choose to rebuild your house, why don't you build the same one? There's nothing there. Like, why not give it everything the old house didn't have? Why not make it bigger, better, more beautiful? That's the beauty in trauma. That's the beauty in betrayal. You can recreate whatever you want, but it's totally your call.
That was such a beautiful, I don't know what, metaphor, analogy. I always mix them up, but that was fantastic.
I'm going to call Mr. Nelson, your homeroom teacher, and tell him that you still haven't gotten this down.
I don't even try. It's like one of those things I've just accepted. It's just not my strength to know which is the difference. But, you've brought up a few times the five stages without like giving away all the goods. Can you hit on the five for us? Just kind of like what the highlight reel of them?
Yeah, I'm happy to, sure. So the first is like a setup stage. And this is just what I saw with every single study participant. You know, if you imagine four legs of a table, the four legs being physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, what I saw with everybody was a real heavy lean on the physical and the mental and kind of neglecting the emotional and the spiritual. So what this means is we're really good at thinking and doing, and not really good at feeling and being. And the challenge with that is that's where our intuition lies. And imagine that table, if we were only strengthening two legs, easy for the table to topple over. So it was sort of a setup stage. Stage two, it's shock. It's the complete breakdown of the body, the mind, the worldview. This is like where someone just pulls a mask off and you're like, what? It's the absolute shock. So the body goes into, you've ignited the stress response. So now you're headed for every single stress-related symptom, illness, condition, disease. Your mind, you cannot wrap your mind around what you just learned. And your worldview is shattered. It's your mental model. It's like, this person's safe. These are the rules. This is how it works. And in a moment, it's completely shattered. Scariest stage. It's terrifying. But think about it. Here's where the bottom bottoms out on you. But if you were walking down the street and the bottom were to bottom out on you, what would you do? You would grab hold of whatever you could to stay safe and stay alive. That's stage three. Survival instincts emerge. It's entirely practical. If you can't help me, get out of my way. How will I survive this experience? Who can I trust? Who can I talk to? But this is the stage we get stuck in. If we're willing to give up all those benefits I mentioned before and mourn and grieve the loss of what will no longer be, and then a few other things, we can move to stage four. And this is finding and adjusting to a new normal. Your old normal doesn't exist anymore. This is like if you've ever moved into a new house, condo, office, apartment, whatever. You know, your stuff isn't there. It's not quite cozy, but it's going to be okay. You're starting to turn down the stress response. What's so interesting in this stage too is, you know, if you were to move, you wouldn't necessarily bring everything with you. And here's where I saw a real shift in friendships. If your friends weren't there for you, you're not taking them with you. If they were indulging in low-level energy gossip, whatever it was, you're changing, you're rewriting the rules. So they don't always come with you. And once you've made this stage your home, you feel comfortable, you're settled into it, you can move into the fifth most beautiful stage. And this is healing, rebirth, and a new worldview. You've turned down the stress response. So you're not breaking down the body. And now you actually have the bandwidth for self-love, for self-care. You weren't interested in eating well or exercising. You were surviving. Now you do. Your mind, you're making new rules based on what you've learned, based on what you're experiencing. And you have a new worldview based on what you've been through. And the four legs of that table, where in the beginning we were only prioritizing the physical and the mental, well, now we're solidly grounded because we're prioritizing the emotional and the spiritual too.
Tired of presentations with no impact, no inspiration, and no traction? Do dull speakers have you and your team disengaged and distracted by smartphones? Christopher McCullough brings energy, insights, and two decades of experience delivered with punch, humor, and heart. Your team will leave energized, uplifted, and with a sense of purpose. Visit ChristopherMcCullough.com to bring some heat to your next speaking engagement. McCullough.com.
Are you seeking to change your career to something that is both fulfilling and challenging? Do you want to help people reach their full potential and strive to achieve their dreams? Would you like to inspire those around you and help create a better world? If you're serious about a career change or just want to explore the craft of personal coaching, contact Accomplishment Coaching. With locations across the country in Washington, D.C., Seattle, Chicago, New York City, and San Diego, Accomplishment Coaching is the leading institution in personal coaching. Our staff carefully monitors the entire program live during the training process and have met the strict standards of ICF International to achieve accreditation. Through a focus on quality instruction rather than endless modules of training, Accomplishment Coaching will guide you from your very first step all the way to becoming one of the finest coaches in the world. Visit AccomplishmentCoaching.com to learn more. Accomplishment Coaching, where coaches lead and leaders coach.
Christopher McAuliffe is your source for the latest in the world of personal coaching. Whether it be speaking with such luminaries as Deepak Chopra or getting the newest techniques and innovation, The Coaching Show is always on the cutting edge of what's happening now.
The Coaching Show is brought to you by Accomplishment Coaching, home of the world's finest coach training program. Here is Christopher McAuliffe, Master Certified Coach.
I love that. Alex, do you see yourself in any of those?
Well, you know, I actually could see myself moving. When I said before when we started that I experienced so much in February, right? I went through a really bad breakup in November, December, and I can see, like, I could see all of these stages through that. And where I am now is, I'm completely in five. Like, it's...
Yeah.
And even my like relationship with that person is in five. It's like, it's a completely different, there's a new ground, there's a new floor. It enabled forgiveness of not only them, but me, looking at the world like differently. It's really cool to see, because I wouldn't have, it's always nice when somebody can put like, hey, step one, step two. And you've, I think when you're in it, you can't always see it. But when you know you've gone through it, intentionally or unintentionally, it's really beautiful to see, oh, that's like absolutely true. And I wish other people could see or try that too, right? I can see where you get stuck in, I really like when you said people get stuck in the survival, because, hey, this is working. I'm holding on to this thing. I didn't fall. I'm not going to risk doing something different where I could fall.
Absolutely. And once you've learned how to survive, you think that's as good as it gets. So you start planting roots there. But then, you know, like energy attracts like energy. So now you're calling situations, circumstances, people to you to meet the energy of where you are. And now it's become your identity, and it's very hard to leave.
Beautifully said. I noticed that I want to follow up on something from earlier in a different direction. Is there more that you two want to talk about these five stages or what you're seeing for yourself there? Or can I move on? Okay. Yeah. So, and I love it. I'm a fan. The thing that I'm echoing though is trust. I'm going back to our conversation about trust, and then I'm looking at your, you know, four-legged table. One of the things that I've noticed is that for me, there's this sort of triangle or three-point line about where often when I'm talking to my clients, they have been betrayed or let down or something. So they no longer trust other people. And to your point, they don't have often a very well-developed spiritual sense or a spiritual connection. They're often angry at the church, religion, or something, you know, that we might call the divine or God or something. And so they've got no, they can't trust all of it. They can't trust other people. So then they can only trust themselves. However, that doesn't work because they're the ones that trusted the other people that proved themselves to be. So they're walking through life. We are walking through life. I won't pretend it's not me. Without any, you know, place that we can go to for solace or clarity or comfort. What do you provide these people? Or do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. One of the things I saw in the study was, there was a real lean towards spirituality, and whether it was some people abandoned religion completely and just became very spiritual, some moved towards the spiritual side of their religion. I was curious why that happened, and I saw that it happened with me as well. And it was, they couldn't trust themselves. They certainly didn't trust their betrayer. So they ventured, they could trust in something other than them. But That, and that's really the beginning of learning how to trust again. You know, it was one of those things that was so clear that I did. I created this four-step process. I'm happy to share it with you too. And it's to rebuild trust because it's so precious and it can take decades to build. You know, I know you like analogies, so here's another one. Ready? So I look
Or is it a metaphor? I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah. So whatever it is, I don't know what it is either. So say that, ask that same teacher. I look at it like when you look at trust, it's like a brick wall. You know, when you think of how that brick wall is created, it's brick by brick by brick. And when it comes to building trust with someone, each interaction where that person had an opportunity to show that they were trustworthy is like a brick in that brick wall. Right. And now imagine you have this brick wall that could have taken years, decades to build. And then in a moment, again, it's shattered. And here's why I don't believe in repairing. I don't think you can repair after betrayal, but I do believe you can rebuild. Because you're looking at that pile of rubble and you may say, you know what? It's not even worth it. I don't want to deal with that. Or you look and you say, okay, it's time to build a new brick wall. But if that were your choice, think about the only way to do that. Same way it was done the first time, brick by brick by brick. So when it comes to rebuilding with the person who hurt you, the person who's been betrayed has to be willing and receptive to it. And then the person who did the betraying has to be a really good bricklayer. And then it's possible. And that's through consistency and repetition and every opportunity that where the person is triggered or where they're feeling insecure or they need some reassurance or they're just in that same space of, oh my gosh, is it happening again? That's where the person who did the betraying, whether it's a friend, coworker, partner, whatever, has to show up powerfully and so differently so that trust can be rebuilt.
Go ahead.
Well, because you were talking about repair versus rebuild. And in your earlier metaphor analogy, we talked about the house being like completely demolished and why wouldn't you rebuild it different? But now mm-hmm. we're talking about a brick wall, which is a lot simpler of a, right? There's just bricks and some mortar. How do you transform a brick wall versus just put up the same brick wall?
Yeah. You know, here's where, and that's why when you go through the stages and you'll know from your own experience, you're a different version of you than beforehand. And I know with me, there isn't, it was two betrayals. It was the first was a huge family betrayal. You know, rebuilding is always a choice, whether you just rebuild yourself and move on. And that's what I did with my family. The other one was with my husband. And here was a complete and utter destruction, crash and burn. But we were able to rebuild something entirely new. You know, not long ago, we married each other again. You know, we happen to be the same people, but we're really not. And we married each other again, but new rules, new vows, new dress, and our four kids is our bridal party. But it's totally, totally different marriage. And it could never have happened had that entire wall come, you know, crashing down and we would choose to rebuild it differently. It's, you know, there were three groups in the study who didn't heal. And it's when you try to repair, all I see is a further deterioration of yourself, the relationship, and nothing really, really happens. But to get back to your, you know, to get back to your question, it needs to be entirely different. And in order for it to be entirely different, the relationship, just you, it takes a complete rebuild of the self. And that's also the difference. One of the other discoveries we made was that originally I was studying something called post-traumatic growth, which is like the upside of trauma, how any trauma, death of a loved one, disease, natural disaster, you know, leaves you with a new awareness perspective that you didn't have. And I was like, you know, I've been in ICU for 11 days. I've lost loved ones. Betrayal feels so different. So I reached out to my study participants and I said, if you've been through something other than, you know, in addition to betrayal, does it feel different for you? Hands down, unanimously, they said, oh my gosh, it's so different. And it's so different because not only do you have to rebuild your life, you have to rebuild the self. You know, trust, rejection, abandonment, confidence, worthiness, When you lose someone you love, you don't question the love. You miss them, you mourn the loss. With betrayal, you question all of it. So it needed a new name. So I coined a new term, post-betrayal transformation. So if I were to give like a formula, it would be post-traumatic growth plus rebuilding the self equals post-betrayal transformation. I don't know if I answered your question.
Just yeah, I think it might just be the thing that you, that people work with you might be more detailed. Cause I'm looking, I was looking at like, hey, what's the real, how do you know the real difference between repair and rebuild, right? In a house, that's really clear. It's super obvious. A brick wall is a little more, you know, and a relationship is probably more like a brick wall. It's not going to look, it's not going to maybe be as obvious. And maybe that's what your books or your programs are actually, you can't just say it in a sentence. This is the difference.
Yeah. No, you know what? Actually, there is a big difference. The difference is it's a difference in boundaries. It's a difference in what you're willing to tolerate. It's a difference in who you become. It's a difference in how you think. It's a difference in all of it. You know, it's things that normally would be acceptable or where you normally say, well, you know what, this is really the best I can hope for, or the best I can expect, or all that I deserve. It becomes so clear. You know, we see that a betrayal hasn't healed. I'll tell you, I see it in these three areas. I see it in relationships. I see it in health. I see it in work. And here's how it shows up. So here's how you know if there's something that hasn't been rebuilt, right? In relationships, you either put that big wall up where you say, nope, no one's getting close to me again. Not doing it, right? Or you have repeat betrayals where the face has changed, but it's the same thing. That's how you know, even though you've moved on to a new relationship, if it's very similar, it's not different. It's, you're still the same. You haven't learned those profound lessons you were meant to learn. You know, and I see it in health where people go to the most well-meaning health experts, doctors, coaches, healers, therapists to manage a stress-related symptom, illness, condition, disease, and it doesn't go away. Why? At the root of it is an unhealed betrayal. You know, we see it at work too, where someone wants to be a team player, but they're so afraid. You know, the person they trusted the most proved untrustworthy. How are they going to trust a boss or a coworker? Or they want to ask for that raise or promotion, but their confidence is shattered. You know, so they don't ask. Why? Because of that betrayal. And then they're resentful and bitter instead. And that's the energy they bring to work every day. So if someone is seeing any lingering effect in their work, in their health, their relationships, then they've just been trying to repair and not rebuild.
There's so many great distinctions. It's clear that you swim in this water all the time. Alex, I know that you and I have wanted to talk about trust in a particular way. And I'm kind of hearing it in the background of what Dr. Debbie's talking about. Do you want to point to it? Do you want me to? How do you
No, I'd love to. Cause it's your distinction. I don't know that it, you know, you specifically create it, but it's yours as an accomplishment coachings. And I want to share it the way I feel like I learned it and interpreted it. And then I'd love actually to hear you both, for you maybe, Christopher, to say that's not actually what it is. And you, Debbie, to I'm curious your thoughts on it. So I remember when I went through accomplishment coaching, this distinction kind of came up, and I'm going to do my best to lay it out clearly, was, hey, the way that we've learned to do trust is doesn't really work. And the way that I remember this, or this is just me trying to remember, and the way I process this is, we either give our trust to people, and that off sometimes doesn't work, right? Because we've given our trust and people have broken it. So it's not necessarily an effective strategy. Another thing we've done is we've made people earn our trust. And that also doesn't work because we've done that and people have broken it. And I remember the way that it was presented was, hey, you can give trust like a gift. So if you give somebody a watch, you know, do they treat it with care? Do they treat it with reverence? Do they clean it? Do they, you know, honor it? Or do you give them the watch and they throw it against the wall? And then you get to, and then if they throw it against the wall, it actually doesn't mean anything about you. It simply means they threw a watch against the wall. And then you get to decide moving forward, do I want to continue to give this person a gift? Christopher, how did I do there?
I'll give you a complete rundown after the call today. No, I think you hit it. What I'm very eager to hear you, Debbie, what you see. What do you think?
You know, I love that distinction. And what I see so often, and this to me is tragic, where someone says, you know, that watch has been thrown against the brick wall, so I'm never giving watches again. And that's the downside. And I'd love to share with your audience. I mean, I like this 4-step trust rebuilding process, because you truly can rebuild it. And it's as simple as, you know, it starts with the absolute most basic aspects of life, because when trust is shattered, we don't trust in anything. So I invite everybody to question. I mean, I'm talking as simple as, will the sun rise? You're not even sure. Will the sun rise? And you question it and go out and look every morning and, oh, sure enough, it is. And when you've seen it enough times that you can actually feel like, okay, you know what? I got that. I can trust in that. You move on to the next level. And that's trusting in your gut. You know, I had a mentor who said that our gut is 10,000 times more perceptive than our head and our mind. But what do? We get a gut instinct and we talk ourselves out of it. So what would happen if we completely trusted our gut? And a simple way to do this is, think of a time where you felt so safe, so happy, so joyful. You know, how did your body feel? How did your mind, what were the thoughts going through you? It felt open, expansive, happy, loving, all of these wonderful things. Think of how you physically felt, right? And then think of that time where you felt so hurt or so duped or so betrayed, so blindsided, whatever. How did your body respond? What were the emotions? What were the senses, the experiences? That's your body's way of saying, this is what it feels like to feel safe, and this is what it feels like to not feel safe. And then as you go about your day and you're learning to trust in your gut, what senses are you getting from the people you're speaking with? Are they closer to that really good feeling or closer to that not good feeling? And trust it. Because even just with trusting in life again and trusting in that basic sense again, you could feel a sense of security starting to build. Once you have those two steps, you can move on to the next one. And this is starting to trust yourself again. Because again, you know, you lost trust in yourself because you were like, I'm a bright person. How did I not see that coming? So what you do is you give yourself little tasks. I'm gonna, you know, journal this morning, and then you do. I'll drink that glass of water, then you do. I'm gonna make that phone call, then you do. I'm not gonna have that drink, and then you don't. Whatever it is. And you do it, and you show yourself that you're trustworthy. So now what's happening is you're building a sense of safety and security. You feel like you have your like the invisible bodyguards around you, right? And then from that space, and only from that space, now you can carefully and cautiously start to trust in other people again. You know, I remember Neil Donald Walsh saying, it's one thing to be, you look both ways before you cross the street, you know, but eventually you want to cross. And that's being careful and cautious. But when you have that basic trust in life again, you've learned to trust your gut. You've learned to trust in yourself. At least you feel like you have some support, some backup. And then you could start to trust in others again.
I love this. I'm learning so much. I'm reveling in this. I'm feeling both, you know, sort of like I'm learning and expanding, but also it's really resonating for me personally. For people who want to start their journey of dealing with betrayals or trust issues, what's the place to start? Is it with your TEDx talk? Is it to go to and do the quiz on your website? What's the good first step?
You know, I would say the absolute first place to start is to take that quiz. And that's to see if you're struggling with post-betrayal syndrome. That was the third discovery. And that was that there's actually this collection, physical, mental, and emotional, this collection of symptoms so common to betrayal that it's known as post-betrayal syndrome. And, you know, the big misconception is we've been taught time heals all wounds, not betrayal. There's a question that reads, is there anything else you'd like to share? We've had a 6,000 plus over the last year and a half. I read every single one of them. And of course, besides reading about the physical, mental, and emotional challenges, people write things like, my betrayal happened 40 years ago. I can still feel the hate. My betrayal happened 30 years ago. I still can't trust again. My betrayal happened 15 years ago. I feel gutted. So we know it does not heal until we face it, feel it, heal it. And that's exactly what the programs are designed to do and what the, you know, what all of it's designed to do.
And that quiz is at the PBT. Hard for me to remember sometimes letters, but it stands for post-betrayal trauma.
Transformation. Yep.
Transformation. PBT.
Yeah.
Oh man, I so had it almost. Okay.
PBTinstitute.com.
Institute.com. I just got to say it slowly for people like me. PBTinstitute.com. I did the quiz. I have a request for you. You do not have to, it's a real request. It's not, you know, there's not going to be any betrayal of trust here. But one of the things was when you ask about the symptoms, there's no place for, I don't feel any of those symptoms, because a lot of us shut it down. And so by asking, you know, hey, are you feeling this, that, or the other thing? It's like, nope, not feeling anything. Would you give us a choice on that drop down menu?
That's it's a great, yeah, I love that idea. But what's so interesting is when a number is very low, you're right. It could, when I see a number that's a certain criteria, I know this person is either completely shut down, or sometimes they're just taking the quiz because they want to just do their own research on my stuff. That's okay too.
You're like, hey, just call me. Stop doing my quiz. Okay, let's say it again because I think I confuse people. PBT. Peanut Butter and Transformation Institute.com. There's a quiz there, PBT. But we can also find you on your TED Talk. There are more than one, but the one that you pointed to is Do You Have Post-Betrayal Syndrome? The book that's out, oh, I have so many things to keep track of. The book that's out is The Unshakable Woman, Four Steps to Rebuilding Your Body, Mind, and Life After a Life Crisis. The book that's coming out in September is Trust Again. What else do you want people to know? Should they just go to your website, debbiesilber.com, and figure it all out?
No, that'll forward to the site. The site is pbtinstitute.com. The quiz is pbtinstitute.com/quiz. They could just start there. And if you want to watch, you know, if you have a little bit more time on your hands, then watch the TEDx. Do You Have Post-Betrayal Syndrome?
What would make you think people have time to watch stuff? I'm kidding. Now, you are a generous human, and you are giving our listeners something today. Is it just one listener? Is it everybody? Is it half of us? Who gets what?
I'm not exactly sure what I'm giving. So,
I'm so sorry. I see that in my little notes, it says an ebook, How Your Biggest Crisis Reveals Your Greatest Gift.
Okay. Everybody gets that. That's just right on the homepage, pbtinstitute.com. And that's just a really interesting ebook because it's so well received. You'll see, I walk you through an example of someone being absolutely blindsided, going from that place of being blindsided to that place of post-betrayal transformation.
It's wonderful stuff. This is just a moment for me as we're wrapping up our time together here. I have a friend who was in a relationship with this woman. And you know, you know how your friends are in a relationship and you're like, not you, Alex, it was a different person. And when it took forever, but then when they realized that this person was not exactly who they thought they were or who they should be with, and they broke up, then they like diagnosed the other person. Well, that person's a sociopath, or that person's, you know, psychotic, or that person's like, you know, a narcissistic or something. And so what I've noticed is, you know, a few relationships since then, but nothing big, because I assume same thing we're talking about, right? Not willing to give it up, not willing to trust again, not doing any work, or not doing the sufficient work to get in relationship again. Beyond sending people to your, first of all, is that a thing? Like, are there sociopaths and narcissists among us and we need to be careful? And
second absolutely. Of all,
are any of them in high office? I'm kidding. The second piece is, from my perspective, that's a little bit of a cop-out. I don't mean to say that those people aren't, but if you're looking at them and trying to protect yourself from them, you're not doing the work on the most important area, which is ourselves. Anything about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I believe it's twofold. It's such, when we're in relationships with people like that, it is the most wonderful opportunity to teach us exactly what we don't want, exactly what we will never go for again. And I have yet to see someone stronger than someone who's healed from betrayal. So I really look at it like you have such a beautiful opportunity to become the strongest, wisest, most empowered version of yourself humanly possible. But if we just blame them and we don't take the lessons we were meant to learn, it's like such a great opportunity wasted.
That's a really great way to frame it. Thank you for that. Alex, what's your last or second to last question today? What do you got?
Well, I have a question. I want to say, just while you guys were doing that, I was taking the quiz. So I'm excited to see. So I don't have it. I haven't got the results yet, but it was actually really great. It got me to think about things in a
different way. Please don't, diagnose just him on every area, just this one.
I think the last thing I have is, we talked a lot about the way you do this with other people, and you shared early on, and I don't want this, you know, we're towards the end, so this might be too big, but you talked about your own relationship, and you do this professionally. I'm really curious how your husband stepped into this. And I'm assuming, I don't know, you're going to tell us that he does not do this professionally. He does something else, but that he stepped into this and he took this journey with you. Is there anything you can share about that? Because that's probably how it goes for most people.
Absolutely. And here's where, first of all, if he wasn't totally and completely transformed, I never would have done this. It's too hard. It's, in so many ways, like what I did with my family, it's easier to say, okay, listen, have a nice life. It's so much harder to go through this complete rebuild with, you know, with the person who hurt you. But I wasn't, so at first I, you know, got him out of the house so I could think clearly, see if I even wanted to do this. And it was definitely a process, but he's my biggest supporter. I mean, think about when you think of all of this, the books, the TEDx, the PBT Institute, we were alive. I had a live physical space in New York until we just, you know, went online. So all of this was created off of really the, you know, the trauma that he caused, and for him to be the one saying, no, you go for it. And I sat my entire family down and I said, okay, this is, we're going to have a ton of attention here. And this is the stuff that gossip thrives on. And, he was the biggest cheerleader, and that says a lot. He called all my friends. He was the one who apologized, saying, I can't believe who I was. I am so terribly sorry. And he's spent the time recreating an entirely new relationship with each of my kids in addition to me. And I think that's why his transformation was so big too. And I would never tell people how to move through something like this, but he was the one who sat all my kids down. And to have four teenagers looking at you, you know, like, you did what to mom? You know, if anything is going to humble you and wake you up, it's losing the respect of the really the only people that care about you. So he is absolutely completely transformed. And now he's a real estate guy, but he has like 40 people in his office and he sits everybody down, like telling them how not to screw up your life. He's become so spiritual. He was handing out Wayne Dyer DVDs to everybody. I mean, he's feeding the homeless in New York City up until recently, you know, it's beautiful to see.
Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
I'd love that. All right. I feel like we have to say goodbye, but I want to just be clear about one thing. I just want a minute of your time so that we can go over this, Alex, one more time. A simile is saying something is like something else. A metaphor is often poetic, and it's saying something is something else. And an analogy is saying something is like something else to make an explanatory point. You can use metaphors and similes when creating an analogy. A simile is a type of metaphor. Therefore, all similes are metaphors, but not all metaphors are similes. All right? There'll be an exam on this next week. I hope that you get some study time.
I'm more confused.
My day is complete after that.
Yeah, I feel betrayed that you did that to me on the air. I need to take the quiz again.
I've had a traumatic experience right now. Please, thank you for indulging me with that moment of humor. But Dr. Deb Silber, what would you, in our last couple of minutes here, what would you leave our few thousand coaches with today? What's your parting thought or your parting shot you'd like us to take with us?
You know, I love that question. Here's the thing. We will experience traumas and crises, and it's like a bad game of hot potato if we just sit with it. When we do something good with something bad, then it served its purpose. So I'm not unique. All I've done is do something positive with what came my way. And whatever your challenge is, I feel like when you move through it, that's the best kind of coach. I mean, those are the coaches that I look to certify. It's not only have they know how to work with people, but they've been through it. They understand it at such a deep level. Those are the greatest teachers. So when you use your trauma for good, you serve the planet.
So great. I very much appreciate the work that you do. And thank you so much for being with us. The website again, it's the Post Betrayal Transformation Institute, PBT Institute. bookshop.com. You can do that. You can get the book, The Unshakable Woman. Wow. 4 steps to rebuilding your body, mind, and life after a life crisis. I think I just made a metaphor. And you can also not only take the quiz, but if you get to that website, get the ebook, How Your Biggest Crisis Reveals Your Greatest Gift. Dr. Deb Silver, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My mouth's not working. Alex, anything that you want the people to know about you before you leave today?
I almost think we should end on my mouth's not working. But right. I think the only thing I want to put in is I am working with a doctor and an Eastern mindfulness expert. And together we created a free program. It's a 30-day program. We did it specifically for right now. It's called How Not to Lose Your Shit and Other Mindfulness Tools. And the idea is to actually support people to create some foundational things that while we're stuck in this quarantine and this chaotic, uncertain times, to give people 3 different perspectives of foundation and how to take care of yourself so strongly. So people can find that on my Instagram, Inspirational Alex. They can reach out to me at alex@thedreammason.com. But it's totally free. They just have to sign up and show up to our first call, which is going to be on the 21st of April.
Okay, so you got about a week to do that to get your, not lose your stuff. All right, thank you both so much for being with us today. That's another edition of The Coaching Show. I'm Christopher McAuliffe, Master Certified Coach, because you have to say it that way. That was Alex Terranova, the Dream Mason at thedreammason.com, and Dr. Dave Silber at pbtinstitute.com. Thank you so much for listening. We will bring you people out on the cutting edge of coaching, people you need to know about, or people just plain interesting here each and every week. And I thank you, dear listener, for being with us today. You can catch The Coaching Show at Accomplishment Media or wherever you find podcasts in the world. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening to The Coaching Show. We will talk to you next week.